It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Donald Trump says he wants to be president for all Americans this hour. Iowans react to the unexpected Donald Trump triumph. In a few minutes, we'll talk with two Iowa school teachers in towns with significant Latino populations. Later in the hour, we'll hear conservative voices, including a Trump supporter. Also, we'll hear from Christian conservative leader Bob Vanderplaats. Tell us your reaction to the election results on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. First of all, I want to welcome Imam Hassan Salim to our studio. He is the imam at the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids, also vice president of the Interreligious Council of Linn County. Imam Salim, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Give us your reaction, your personal reaction first, and then I'd like to ask about the reaction of the community where your mosque is.
Sure. Well, initially the reaction was one of dismay, perhaps disbelief, and a little bit of horror, fear, and mixed with sadness. But that was, of course, the initial reaction. But we all have to accept the results of the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Flesh out a little bit of what's behind the fear, the horror. What specifically came to mind when you envisioned him as president? What would he do that would make you fearful?
Throughout the campaign, we've heard lots of talk about banning all Muslims from entering the United States of America. We are talking about family, friends of millions of Muslims who are here, citizens of this country, and very positive and loyal citizens. And therefore, this was the main reason for fear, but also all the rhetoric that is anti-Islam and Muslims, and the mistrust or distrust of the American Muslim communities. It was perhaps all talk until the point of the results came out. We are now afraid of actions to happen.
Mm-hmm. What specific actions?
Perhaps things like registering Muslims, targeting Muslims systematically, targeting our communities. Lots of fear from the young Muslims in schools, women who are dressed in the traditional Muslim headscarf, perhaps are the biggest target because of the appearance. They can easily targeted as known as Muslims when they are out in public. But also just generally the idea of the absence of trust. This is something issue that we will have to be facing and dealing with.
Mm-hmm. How are your community members, men and women in your community, reacting here? What fears do they have?
In the last day or so, I've been doing a lot of counseling with, especially the young members of the community. They are just not able to understand that we're talking about millions of people who may have made their decision based on fear of Islam and Muslims. So helping people trying to make sense of this, the reaction is still a little bit of disbelief, but we have to accept and understand that this is a democratic process. And as Americans, first of all, we do accept the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned the hijab as a something that can identify a Muslim woman in public. Are people in your community thinking of changing that, perhaps not wearing?
Of course. Already had the discussions and conversations with many, actually, Muslim women who are afraid of going out dressed in the traditional headscarf. Some of them already made the decision that they will not be wearing this. Some of them are asked by their parents, their family and relatives, not to put themselves in a place where they can be targeted. But with that being said, I don't want to, take things out of proportion. We have been here, at least in Cedar Rapids or in Iowa, we haven't seen any violence or mm-hmm. incidents that are targeting. But, of course, right now, anything can be expected.
In fact, I'm looking at my news screen, Imam Salim here. You're probably not aware of this, but it was just posted on the NBC News website. The first reports, a Muslim student from the University of Louisiana reported being attacked by two men on Wednesday morning. I don't know the details of that, but just to know that the fears perhaps are grounded in real fears, is not imagined fears.
Of course, we have to be realistic, and this is something that we have to be prepared and ready for.
Mm-hmm. I heard that some in your community might even go so far as to change names.
I have had conversations with especially university students, perhaps jokingly, thinking about changing their names. But of course, we have to understand that what needs to be done is goes beyond just changing names and, you know, not wearing the headscarf. We will have to do a lot of work as far as outreaching, being open and to the mm-hmm. public and having conversations. Again, reassuring people that we are just as loyal and good citizens as everyone else.
It might be a good time to remind people how long the roots of Muslims go back in Iowa and the U.S.
We are talking about Muslims arriving late 1800 and early 1900, building the first and longest standing mosque in all of North America. Cedar Rapids have the first and Muslim exclusive cemetery in all of North America. The roots go way far in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For you as the imam in Cedar Rapids at the Islamic Center, can women then just decide not to have the headscarves? Is that in keeping with your faith, or does the imam, do you have to give a special accordance that they can do that?
I do not have the there is no one with an authority to give a permission women to do so. It is solely based on personal concerns, and all I can only give them counsel, and I totally support if a woman feels that she's not safe, she doesn't feel comfortable doing so. Of course, she has not just my support, but the support of the entire community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand, Imam Salim, you have two daughters?
Yes, correct.
What ages, may I ask?
One is five and the other is two.
Okay, quite young yet. Have you talked with them about this? Are they concerned?
The one who is five is quite smart, and she can have already, she already understood the process of elections and people running for presidency and all of this. And honestly, I was very excited. She was very excited to wake up one day and know that America has elected its first female president. She was a bit disappointed. But again, we have to explain to her that this is the natural course of the democratic process. People make their decision, and we have to work and accept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What have been the biggest challenges for you in looking after your community of Muslims in Cedar Rapids?
I will tell you that the biggest challenge is to do two things. Number one is to do a lot of outreach, make sure that we have friends, we have allies, we have people that we're working with, ensuring everyone that we are part, a very important part of the fabric of the society here. And the other is trying to keep our youth from any forces of radicalism, which goes, they face this online quite often. And now this challenge will be particularly even more challenging.
Mm-hmm. Have you been reaching out to non-Muslims in your community?
Of course, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what's been their reaction?
One of support. We are, have been receiving the support and seeing it in actions for a long time, and it continues to manifest itself. Yeah.
Okay. Imam Hassan Salim of the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids, Vice President of the Interreligious Council of Linn County. One question before I go. If you were an advisor to President-elect Trump, what would you advise him if you had a minute or two with him in a room?
I think would I advise him to be aware of the language used, that there are millions of American Muslims who are truly hurt every time he does not distinguish between what Islam is and who Muslims are and American Muslims are and radical Islam. These are two separate things, and he needs to make it very clear that there is a difference between the two.
Okay, thank you for coming in. Hassan Salim, Imam at the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids. We appreciate your effort coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, getting reaction to the unexpected result in the elections, the victory by Donald Trump. He is now president-elect of the United States, the 45th. He will become the 45th president of the United States. Joining us now to give us some reaction from the classroom, Diane Gibson is with us, high school social studies teacher at Perry High School. Perry in sort of the southwest corner of the state. Diane Gibson, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us, another teacher, Catherine Lyons. Catherine, a fifth grade teacher at Morris Elementary in Des Moines. Hi, Catherine, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Let me start with you, Diane, and Perry. Tell us about the mix in your classroom. Perry has a large Latino population, doesn't it?
Yes, we are a very diverse population here in high school. Our Latino population is a good portion of it. And as I understand it, I think my principal was on with you a little earlier here today.
Oh.
Dan Marburger.
Okay, very good. The reaction in your classroom yesterday? Among the, what are we talking, 10th, 11th graders?
My government class is 12th graders.
Okay.
My reaction that I had was it was very definitive, whether Hillary supporters or Donald supporters, you could pretty much tell the difference in what the kids were thinking. They didn't really say a whole lot, but their body language told me whether they were happy or not. And those that were Trump supporters were a little bit more vocal about their happiness rather than the Clinton supporters, that they were just kind of quiet.
Mm-hmm. Did you encourage discussion? Did you, or was that something that you didn't want to discuss yesterday in particular?
Oh, we discussed the outcome. We discussed it probably in terms of agreeing to disagree. We have a very diverse beliefs and in our society as a whole, and everybody is entitled to their beliefs and what they think. And as Mr. Trump said yesterday and Mrs. Clinton said yesterday morning, you know, it's time now that we, while we keep our beliefs, we agree to disagree and we work together for the furthering and the betterment of our country.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many of the kids you have in your high school class there may have undocumented immigrants as parents or family members?
I do not know that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
What were some of the things running through your mind when you watched the results come in? Do you immediately go into sort of planning mode? What am I going to do with this in the classroom tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that as I was watching it. As I was watching it, well, let's see, the day before, as we were talking about the election and what was happening during the day on Tuesday and what was going on at the polls and things, you know, we were talking about the national polls and what they were saying, and I was telling my class that my personal opinion about the polls is they're probably closer than what they are showing us. And it kind of turned out to be I was right.
Mm-hmm.
I really honestly did not think it would swing the way it did. I was kind of surprised when I woke up about 2 a.m. and I was seeing the breaking news line saying President-elect Trump, and I'm going, wow, this is going to be an interesting day tomorrow. And it was.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Lyons, you were a fifth grade teacher at Morris Elementary in Des Moines. You teach a younger set than does Diane. Yours are, I guess, 10, 11-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So what was that day like yesterday? I understand this is your first presidential election in the classroom.
Yes, it is. This is I'm starting my fourth year of teaching. The reaction was pretty subdued. We spent earlier days Monday and part of last week talking about elections and how they work and what an electoral college is and what it looks like when you go into the voting booth. We did a mock election in my classroom, in my class. Overwhelmingly voted for Clinton. So the reaction was pretty subdued. They were talking about it with some anxiety, sometimes asking a lot of questions about what does this mean. I just gave them space to listen to them and to hear those concerns and sometimes, you know, give them some background knowledge on how exactly our government works to kind of calm some of their anxieties.
Give us an idea, Catherine, of how diverse your classroom is there at Morris Elementary in Des Moines.
Yeah, my classroom of my students, we are 55% students of color, so non-white students make up 55% of my class.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell, I mean, you're dealing with fifth graders, how much did the kids really pay attention to the election, the issues? How much did they absorb, do you think?
I was pretty shocked at how well informed they were about issues. It seemed like initially, you know, when we started the school year, as the political ads started to kick up, that was where a lot of their information came from originally. I wasn't able to bring in, you know, a lot of footage from the debates due to adult topics being discussed, but we did use resources like Scholastic News that had some kid-friendly articles really just highlighting the issues with not using bias, just saying here's this person's point of view, here's this person's point of view, so that they could really absorb and understand what that meant and form their own opinion about it.
Mm-hmm. Bullying, that's been a theme of this election. It's, of course, also a theme in schools. Did that come up in the discussions with your kids there?
Mm-hmm. It did. A lot of my kids were questioning the name-calling from both sides back and forth. Why are they doing that? That doesn't seem like what they should be talking about, were a lot of the things that they said. We spent a lot of time at the beginning of the year. Every year I spend a lot of time creating a classroom family and a classroom community, and that's something that is really important to me. And so we spent a lot of time talking about how, even though these are things that we hear adults that are really in power using these words and this language, that that's not the way that we talk to each other in our classroom and talk to other people outside of our classroom. I set them up kind of to be the example to people out in the world of how they should act.
Mm-hmm. Well, he may be different as president, but as a campaigner, Donald Trump has words that we haven't heard from any other presidential nominee by a long shot. Are you worried that that is a role model you would not like to see mirrored in your children?
I feel like that the language used isn't something that I want to hear from my students. We talked about if other people out that we meet elsewhere outside of school or inside of school are using the same kind of language that he did, that we need to call them out on it and let them know that that is not okay to use those words to people that are out in the world, that we can be people that stand up to that and that put an end to it.
Mm-hmm. Diane Gibson, back to you with the high schoolers at Perry in Perry High School. Bullying come up in conversations about this election?
Not really with ours. Ours, we kind of took the turn as to where each presidential candidate stood and what the issues were and where we can find it and why in our democratic system it is important to know what we want, what is acceptable to ourselves. And are we going to be able to choose somebody that's acceptable to ourselves? And will we respect the person that we look at every morning in the mirror when we make that choice?
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at both sides. And, you know, like she said, I couldn't use the debates in my class because they really didn't give us any substance to work from. My kids got very, very tired of the sniping and things that went on, and they didn't understand why these adults were doing this. And, you know, I agreed with them, and I told them that a lot of people are probably thinking the same thing that they are. Why are they behaving this way? And mm-hmm. is it correct? And we talked a lot about that.
We have an email from Kyle Hammond just a moment ago. I'll read a little bit of it. Kyle Hammond says he's an art teacher in Cedar Rapids. I teach art to upper elementary school students. When it comes down to it, both candidates were terrible examples, he writes, for our youth. Obviously, one had more impressionable ways of going about things, but instead of being role models, both candidates were incredibly crude. Just goes to show how much kids are influenced by what they see and hear. They're exposed to so much more than we were in the media. We were in the media. That from Kyle Hammond via email. We have just a couple minutes left, Catherine and Diane. I wonder, what are your thoughts on where you go here? I mean, what do you see your role there as teachers. I understand, at least from my school days, and I think still today, your job, Catherine, is and Diane, is not to communicate your political views, is it?
No, it's not. No. In fact, I walk a very fine line, and we make sure we get both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So where do you go from here? What is the constructive way ahead that you will be trying to communicate to your students? Catherine, you first with your fifth graders.
I mean, I had a student on the playground yesterday hugging me, telling me he was going to miss me if his family gets deported. So my position is one of comforting them, but also empowering them and giving them a voice. I told them anytime anyone in government, I don't care if it's the president or governor or our senators or representatives, if anyone is doing something we don't like, we have a voice in our country. We can make phone calls. We can write letters. And we have the power and they have the power to let their voice and their opinion be heard.
Mm-hmm. Is there the very real threat of kids in your class losing their parents through deportation?
I don't know the status of my students. I do know that some of them are scared of that. I explained as best as I could what that means, but I don't know the status of all of my students.
Diane Gibson, what's the way forward for you with your class in high school at Perry High?
Well, I took my cue from President Obama today. He came out and talked about his transition and what he's going to do and the team that he's going to work with, that they're going to make it a gracious, peaceful transfer of authority and power from one president to the other, like he had with President Bush. And to that end, we've also talked about, you know, now we're the watchdog of our government. Do they do what we want? If they don't do what we want, we have a voice. We can call, we can write letters, we can protest peacefully. We can do a lot of things to make it known what we think and what we want. And now is the time to agree to disagree and come and work for the betterment of what we believe our country should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, Diane, before we go, you've been teaching for a while longer than Catherine. Does this compare to other post-election periods in the classroom?
This post-election in the classroom is entirely different than what we've had before. I've not seen kids quite subdued in the body language that I've seen in the last couple days here. I do know that there's probably some concern. My kids are old enough, they're not going to voice it in the classroom, but they do have voice it to, like, our counselors privately and with people that they feel very comfortable with talking about that.
Okay. We have to go, Diane. Diane Gibson, thank you very much for both of you for giving us the picture from your classrooms. Diane Gibson, high school social studies teacher at Perry High School. Catherine Lyons, fifth grade teacher at Morris Elementary in Des Moines. Thank you both so much for giving us the picture.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue our conversation reaction to Donald Trump's victory. We'll talk with a Trump supporter when we come back, and also with the Christian conservative leader, Bob Vanderplaats, and a lot of action on our Facebook page. If you'd like to give us your six-word reaction to the election results, please do so at Iowa's Facebook page. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in a moment. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. On the day when Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, meets our current president, Barack Obama, in the White House, so we're getting reactions to the surprise victory of Donald Trump. He will become our 45th president in 2017. We've been asking you on our Facebook page to give us your reactions in six words or less. Here's a few of the reactions that you've had on our Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Terrible, but the show will go on. Another, disappointed, sad, and disgusted, but hopeful. Another, it will be politics as usual. Another, fearful of social and environmental injustice. Another, put on the gloves and get ready to fight. And finally, one that said, better than yesterday, but still quite apprehensive. Join our conversation ongoing on our Facebook page with your six words to describe your reaction. We're getting reaction in words, voices this hour. Let's turn to Marvin Johnson joining us by phone. Marvin Johnson is a Trump supporter, a resident of Kanawha. That's a small town in North Iowa. He's a former chairman of the Hancock County Republicans and a retired agronomist. Marvin Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Give us your reaction. How surprised were you when your candidate won?
Well, I had a positive attitude going into it, but I was a little hesitant. My attitude was a little hesitant, but as the night went on, I could see that it was really going to happen, and I was thrilled, actually.
Mm-hmm. Your entire family as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, why do you back Trump?
Well, he wasn't my first choice to begin. I was a Ted Cruz supporter, but as the Republican people started to drop out, I jumped on board with Trump because I was very concerned about if Hillary Clinton would be our president.
Mm-hmm. On what specific issues do you think Donald Trump will now do a better job than Hillary Clinton would have?
Well, number one, I think the Supreme Court justice choices. He will be I've heard recently about the list of strong constitutionalists that he has on his list, and that was a big concern of mine, because without that, it doesn't really matter what the Congress and Senate do. The courts can overrule it.
Mm-hmm. Other issues that are on top of your list?
National security, taking care of our veterans. I'm a veteran, but there's a lot of veterans out there that need a lot more care than I do. That was a main concern of mine. Abortion is a concern, and health care.
What do you see coming your way as far as health care? It looks like the Republican-led Congress, both houses, and the new president could do away with that in fairly short order. Where do you want to see that go?
Well, I'm not sure of the route. And I know we need lower premiums. I understand that being able to shop from state to state across state lines would be a great benefit. And I guess that's the main thing I would do is create competition, let it go back into the business world,
mm-hmm.
Instead of the government running it.
Marvin Johnson, what do you say to those who are very concerned? And we heard some of those voices in our first half hour. I'm sure you have heard some of those too, or read about them in the media. Those concerned, even fearful of what life may be like under a President Trump for minorities, for Latinos, for Muslims, for gays and lesbians.
I think a lot of that fear was created by the media. A few things that Donald Trump said, I think, were magnified. And it just created fear amongst the people, and then the media pushed it. And
on his first day, when he declared his candidacy, he did say Mexicans. He said in the same sentence, rapists, criminals, drug dealers, and so forth. I don't know if repeating his word is magnifying it, though. Do you understand my point?
I understand your point, but he wasn't talking about all Mexicans. There are those types coming across the borders. There are also decent folks coming across the borders. He just happened to pick that group that would be more troublesome to our country.
Mm-hmm. Marvin Johnson, before we say goodbye, what are your expectations for Donald Trump as president with a GOP Congress in the first few months?
I think it'll be, I think they'll get a lot done. I don't think they're going to cram stuff down people's throats. I think we just need to get this country back to where it should be. There's too much political correctness going on, and I think he's going to do a great job.
Okay. Marvin Johnson, I want to thank you also. You mentioned you're a veteran. Thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you very much, and happy birthday to the Marine Corps today, because I'm a Marine Corps veteran. Thank you.
All right. Very good.
Goodbye.
Goodbye now. Resident of Kanawha in northern Iowa. Further reaction from Iowans to the Trump victory. Next, Bob Vanderplaats is joining us. He's been on this program before, president of the Family Leader, a Christian conservative group. Bob Vanderplaats, are you on the line with us?
I am on the line. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you back on the program, Bob. I enjoy talking to you from time to time. Where did we leave off? Because we've talked a lot about politics recently. You have endorsed or not endorsed Trump in the final stages of the campaign.
Well, I never did publicly endorse Donald Trump. I did vote for Donald Trump. I think what I've told you before is that Mr. Trump and I have been friends for the last 6 years. And when I met with Mr. Trump one-on-one in his office after he became the presumptive nominee to the Republican Party, I said to Mr. Trump, you know, this isn't about me endorsing you. but it's about me being a friend to you. And that means when you do things that are right, I'm going to cheer you on. And when you do things I think are out of bounds or that, you know, aren't right, I'm going to challenge you and I'm going to hold you accountable. That's what friends do. And I think I did that pretty well throughout the campaign.
Can you name a few things where you called him out as saying out of bounds, where you actually contacted him about that?
You know, let me say positive things first. First of all, when he selected Mike Pence as his vice president, I cheered him on. Mike Pence is a great guy. He was a great congressman, a great governor. I think he's going to be a really good asset.
And a fellow evangelical, right?
Right. He's one of us. He comes from us. He just doesn't come to us. He'll be a great asset to the Trump administration. Two is when he put out his list of Supreme Court justices. Those are solid names, and I cheered him on for doing that. But I did call him out publicly, and you might recall this, when basically he disqualified a judge because of being a Hispanic. Now, there might be a lot of reasons why that judge needed to be disqualified from hearing that particular case, but one of them was not because of his origin, his Hispanic origin. Two, I mean, I called him out very publicly after the tape was released with the Billy Bush tape. I called him out publicly if he mocked anybody or if he used profane words or things of that nature. So I did do that.
And how did he react to that?
Well, I think he reacted fairly well. And frankly, I think Donald Trump respects a friend. I think he respects friendship that will hold accountable. I don't see him as a weak person. And typically when you're a strong person, you can handle a back and forth, especially with somebody if you know they have their best interest at mind. And I told him in his office, and I still mean that today, I have his best interest in mind.
Mm-hmm. We've heard that evangelicals, not just in Iowa, but across the country, are somewhat split in their support for Trump, at least during the campaign. We're in a new period now, post-campaign. What is your sense here in Iowa? Are Iowa's evangelicals unified behind Trump?
I believe, well, even what you saw in the election, I think you saw evangelicals come out in record numbers, people of faith voting for Trump. Matter of fact, I think if Mr. Trump looks at one demographic that might be responsible for him winning the presidency, it might be the evangelical vote, the people of faith who came out in record numbers. And I think that was motivated for a couple reasons. One is, I think they saw Mr. Trump taking very bold positions on the sanctity of human life, on religious liberty, on the appointment of Supreme Court justices, on how he would stand with the nation of Israel, those types of things, repealing Obamacare economics. And so I think that's where he motivated them to say, vote for me. Even though you might not like a lot of some things about me, vote for me because of that. But the other motivating force, I think, for evangelicals was they're very concerned about a Hillary Clinton presidency. They're very concerned about the justices she would appoint. They're very, very concerned about her late-term abortion stand. And quite frankly, they saw it as status quo, nothing new, and we couldn't afford four more years going that direction.
Mm-hmm. What do you have to say to those who feel awful about the election of Donald Trump, sort of a gut punch feeling as president, people who feel violated by his offensive remarks about women and other groups?
Well, first of all, if they're offended by his remarks about women or other groups, I think that's okay. I mean, I think that's a right feeling about being offended and even verbalizing that offense. We don't want our leaders to respond in negative ways toward any group. We want all Americans to be respected and to be uplifted. We can address the issues or we can address the actions, but we want to love and care and uplift every person. But my comment to them would be, you know, give him a chance. I know him on a personal level. I believe he is a very, very good person who, like many of us, does wrong things once in a while. And when we do wrong things, we should have people holding us to account. He is surrounding himself, though, I think, with excellent people. And it's demonstrated in a Mike Pence. If anybody sees the character of Mike Pence, whether you agree or disagree with Mike Pence on the issues, I think almost everybody unilaterally would say, but I endorse the character of a Mike Pence. Donald Trump became successful in business by the people he surrounded himself with. I think that's how he's going to be successful as a president, is by who he surrounds himself with.
I was looking on your website, Bob Vanderplaats, of the Family Leader. I was seeing a comment on this election results. I think these would be your words. They're on your website. During this election season, many Christians have been discouraged by discord in the body of Christ. The enemy has been working overtime to fester divisiveness, distracting Christians from being salt and light to a desperate culture. I guess my question, first of all, about that passage, who is the enemy?
Well, I think what the enemy would be in from the Christian faith, the enemy is always Satan. And that actually wasn't written by me, but I definitely endorse those words. That they're written by our church ambassador network director, Greg Baker. Mm-hmm. But what the discord is, for Christians, we want to be united not around a candidate, not around a party, but around the truth that is in God's word and about Jesus Christ, who is the fulfillment of the scriptures. That is where unity should be, and in Christ's teaching. But sometimes in the political world, we get behind candidates, and we start going after each other, and we don't want to see that kind of discord in the body of Christ. That does not reflect Jesus at all very well, and we always want to be a good reflection of him.
Mm-hmm. What are you hearing from fellow evangelicals about this surprise victory of Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, I think and, you know, it's a little bit like Marvin Johnson, who was an active supporter of Donald Trump. I think everybody would say they were surprised because it went against conventional thinking. It went against all polling science and exit polling. The day before the afternoon of the election, I was told by an expert in the field that Hillary Clinton would be president. Donald Trump would be repudiated. The Senate would be in Democrat hands, the Republican Party would be in chaos, and there was no silent vote for Donald Trump. All of that was wrong. And I think what we believe as believers who prayed through this election is God's hand probably intervened in this election.
Mm-hmm. You said before in those words, or you endorsed those words on your website, the enemy has been working overtime to fester divisiveness and so forth here. And you said the enemy is Satan. I wonder who in person reflects Satan in your eyes?
No, we would never say that. Who reflects Satan in our eyes? What it is that we do believe Satan is working overtime, even right now as you and I speak.
Mm-hmm.
He's working overtime to disqualify me and my testimony, or to disqualify you. And he loves nothing better than, especially when people of faith, people who bear the name of Jesus Christ, that they have discord with one another. And so that's, I think, the challenge there is that let's find our unity frequently in this election. I called on our followers, our base, to think bigger than 2016, to think bigger than an individual candidate, because our hope is not in Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Our hope is not in a Republican Party or a Democrat Party. Our hope is in the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and that is where our hope should always be placed.
Okay, one last question before we say goodbye. Bob Vanderplaats, if you were, and you have been with Donald Trump in a room, what would you say with him? If you had 1 minute with him in a room right now, what would you say?
I would tell Mr. Trump, understand that I believe it is God that intervened that allowed you to be here. So in all of your leadership, all of your action, always do things that honor God, and then have a bold and courageous spirit. Be a bold and courageous leader, because America needs a bold and courageous leader today. But do so in a way that honors God and in turn blesses the American people.
Bob Vanderplaats, president of the Family Leader, thank you very much for this conversation, and we'll talk to you again in the future, Bob. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. God bless.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Finally, today, as we get reactions from various parts of the political spectrum to the surprise Donald Trump victory in the presidential election, let's go back to someone we've talked to at least a couple times. Dan Durant is with us on phone. He's a Gary Johnson supporter from West Des Moines, a financial advisor in West Des Moines. Dan, are you there?
I am.
Okay. So what do I remember about the last conversation? You were you solid Gary Johnson, or were you leaning to Trump?
Well, I think I've waffled. I don't know how many times.
You've waffled.
Okay.
I did remember that right. Okay. So where did you end up?
I voted for Gary Johnson. I never could bring myself to support Donald Trump. Some of the things that he said publicly were just not what I was looking for in a president. And There was even a period of time where I thought I would hold my nose and vote for Hillary Clinton, and I couldn't do that either.
What held you back from what held you back from that mostly?
Well, I don't think that the words FBI investigation and presidential candidate should ever be used in the same sentence. Just me.
Even if, okay, the FBI actually said there was no reason to indict Hillary Clinton.
It doesn't matter. It should, she should be above reproach, and she wasn't.
Okay. Go back to election night. What are your thoughts? Many surprised by the election of Donald Trump. What was your reaction?
I was shocked. I was fully prepared. 48 hours ago, I was fully prepared to wake up and use the words President-elect Clinton. I really thought that she would be the nominee, and or the she would be the president. And it was when I saw Florida go into the Trump column, I knew things were going to change, and they were going to change drastically and radically, and that the media had it wrong.
Mm-hmm. What is your takeaway from this election?
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Dan, in West Des Moines there, I'm wondering if you have any conversations that come to mind since the election night that stick out in your mind with people who are looking forward to President Trump and perhaps those who are not?
I haven't had any conversations with people who are not looking forward to a Trump presidency. I've been on Facebook, and I've seen some of the quotes and comments, and I choose not to engage in that fashion. At some point, I'll have a conversation with somebody, but the Trump supporters they're pretty ecstatic, and they should be. He was their guy, and he, despite all the odds, he defied all the odds, he's going to be our president. And I think, one of the things about following Bob Vanderplas is, he says things much more eloquently than I do. Trump has surrounded himself with some quality people, and I think that says something about his judgment, and that's why I'm cautiously optimistic. Yeah, he's done some lousy things, and he said some lousy things, and he probably wishes he could take them back at this point. But as far as I'm concerned, I want to see what he's going to do and how he's going to shape the country going forward.
Mm-hmm. We all know that this campaign has been brutal. It's been ugly. It's been divisive. A lot of that we can put to Donald Trump, I think we would agree. Are you concerned about unity in the country now that we've had such an election that has torn open a wound in the fabric of America?
Somewhere in the last 16 years, we've lost unity in the country. We came together after 9/11 as a nation for a couple of years. And since then, we have become increasingly divisive. I hope that Donald Trump and Mike Pence can heal it, and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. I hope that they can work with the Democrats in Congress to create some sort of unity in this country. But this just didn't happen in the last year and a half. This has been going on for a very long time, which is sad. It's not the country I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly before we go, we've been hearing about protests spreading around the country. You probably have too if you've been following it. What is your reaction to Not Our President protests by thousands across the country, mostly in major cities?
Well, I was going to joke and say me and my Gary Johnson supporters are going to go out and protest this afternoon, but I guess I got better things to do. you live in a free country, and you have, because of that, you have the privilege of being able to voice your opinion and protest if you don't like what's happening, but it's not going to change anything.
All right.
And let's see what Trump does. Let's see. Bob may be right. He may be the kind of guy that Bob's described, and if that's the case, then we might all be better off for it. That's why I'm cautiously optimistic.
Thank you. Dan Durant, financial advisor in West Des Moines, we've been following. Thanks for sharing your thoughts at this point, Dan.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Ben.
One last email from Virginia listening. I just want to say that all evangelicals do not support Donald Trump. I am an evangelical, and I do not approve of Trump's character. I voted for Hillary. So join our conversation on Facebook, also on Twitter, if you'd like to, IPR Talk. Many more conversations about the election outcome to come right here on River to River, produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.